C1P. Number 12A.
We have seen that now Mrs. Eddy takes up that question of how to govern the body. Why should not the body be governed by hypnotism? Because it shows that mesmerism, hypnotism, spiritualism, all these isms can actually govern the body and can bring about a change in the body. So why should we have recourse to science and Christian science if other isms and ologies can bring about changes in the body too? So she has to compare the value of Christian science versus mesmerism and hypnotism, and she shows, look here, hypnotism is dualistic. You can do good or evil effects with it, produce good and evil effects with it. With science, you can only produce good effects, and that's the difference. And therefore, she can say with absolute authority, therefore, hypnotism and mesmerism is not the truth, but science is the truth. She then goes on, because that's not yet the whole point, what she wants to bring out. She then goes on and says, you know that there are two kinds of mesmerism, namely voluntary mesmerism and involuntary mesmerism. And the voluntary mesmerism naturally is produced consciously, is induced consciously. And whereas involuntary mesmerism is induced unconsciously. And we come again to that great question that we have to deal with, conscious and unconscious mesmerism, or therefore with a system of treating disease through conscious means and unconscious means. Involuntary mesmerism, she says, is self-mesmerism. And in that self-mesmerism of mesmerism, the main point is this, that we are not aware that we are mesmerized. Because it's self-mesmerism, we don't have the clear view of truth, and therefore we cannot really see that we are constantly in a state of being mesmerized. And so she brings out and says, look here, that's the point, that we are living actually in a universe where we are unconsciously mesmerized by the whole world. Mortal existence, she says, and here you have now the main point, mortal existence, it's about what is being unchanged, the counterfeit is mortal existence. Mortal existence is a state of self-deception, not the truth of being. It's a state of self-mesmerism. That whole mortal existence, because it is not the truth of being, therefore it must be an erroneous sense of being, is therefore living in a state of illusion, where mortal mind is constantly producing on the body the results of false opinions. Can you see? We are in the whole, mortals are still in that dream, in that Adam dream. Adam never woke up, really. Only Jesus woke up from the dream of material life. But the whole world, we mortals, are still in that dream of being mesmerized unconsciously with all the arguments of the world, with all the opinions of the world. That's our universe. Our universe consists of all these unconscious mortal mind of these collective subconscious mortal mind, the collective subconscious, and we are constantly in that whole web of a mesmeric state, where we believe our sense testimony, where we believe that matter is real, that matter is hot, that matter can be hot and cold, where we believe that there is a time and that there is a space. We constantly live in that mesmeric universe where we believe all kinds of things. that mortal mind is, and therefore mortal mind is constantly producing on our body this involuntary mesmeric condition. And therefore we are so surprised that suddenly we may fall sick, and suddenly we may have pain, that suddenly we have an accident, that suddenly something happens that brings discord into our life, and think, while I was never thinking about it. Here she must explain, well, that's it, what is going on, that the whole world, every mortal, is living in a mesmeric state. Therefore, now comes the conclusion of the whole thing. Therefore, she says, belief must be instructed by spiritual understanding. We must understand the truth of being, the truth of being. We must understand the truth of being because the Christian state is one of rectitude and spiritual understanding. Well, a mortal that is under the influence of and opinion of unconscious mortal mind, of unconscious mesmeric influence, is certainly not the man of rectitude, is certainly a poor thing, thrown to and fro just as the wind blows, as the beliefs blow. And therefore, she can see the necessity, therefore, for metaphysics, the necessity for science, the necessity of getting rid of all the beliefs and therefore waking up to the facts of truth and see being from the point of view of truth. Here we are, have truth, and therefore demands us to be instructed in spiritual science. It's only in this way that we really can rid ourselves of this involuntary mesmerism. The worst thing always about a mortal state of things is that the mortal mind does not know that it is in a bad state, that it does not know that it is wrong. If mortal mind would know that it is wrong, it could improve itself. It would not be any more mortal mind. It would know something about the truth. But mortal mind does not know the truth, and therefore we live and move and have our being in this mortal mind atmosphere, not even being aware that we are mesmerized. And we feel how funny those people who are hypnotized consciously and voluntarily. How can that happen? That's quite a marvel, it's quite an enigma. Not knowing that we are in the same state of being hypnotized and mesmerized by the whole world belief. Therefore the necessity, you see, of tackling our whole being from the point of view of science, from the point of view of truth. Yes. Then we come to the next subtone, truth as life. My epitome here reads like this. Through the method of exalting the patient's thought, can you hear life? Exalting, the exaltation of life, the method of exaltation, the patient's thought, with what? With the truth of being, then the patient's health improves. Now we get the healing method. It says, all right, after you have seen in principle that the whole world lives in a mesmeric state, so you better turn to science, because science alone can tell you the truth of being. Okay, therefore, at the point of life, exalt your thought above the whole mortal state of things and begin to realize that you have to live on a higher realm, that of the truth of being, and that will produce health. Again, she shows that if we don't do that, if we don't exalt ourselves and rest in the whole atmosphere of being mesmerized involuntarily, that then the practitioner cannot improve a case, that the practitioner then rather injures a case if he believes that whole mortal mind stuff. and therefore only in proportion to the truth or error that he entertains in his consciousness can he influence the case. So she tells us here about the metaphysical healing method and says, use your exalted consciousness in order to exalt the patient's consciousness too. How can you do it? Well, you have to convince him that he should not stay on the level of sin and sickness, on the level of being mesmerized by mortal mind. Arouse the sinner to a higher sense of truth. Do something about him. Show him that sin confers no pleasure, and this will increase, you have the tone of life, this will increase the patient's ability to master evil and to love good. And so she says that same method applies for both, for sin and sickness, and so in this way the practitioner can help permanently the sick and can make him better mentally and physically. So this is the method of life. So the method is the true method. Meet this error with the truth of being. Exhibit the sufferings that sin brings. Make him awake. Shake him up, you see. Shake him up out of his mesmeric belief and try to get him out of it and exalt him. Convince him that there is no real pleasure in sin. Arouse the sinner out of his wrong views. Show him that sin confers no pleasure. And if you do that and can arouse him, then the patient will feel within himself really the love for good, and that induces then the healing process. Then we come to truth as truth. Again, quite a long passage, and therefore I think we have to consider it very carefully, what she says here. It's a very important passage. The epitome here is, with Christian Science, we can master all the beliefs of mortal manhood and lift humanity above itself. Actually, that is what we would like to see to happen. That actually, that the purpose of healing would be to establish a higher manhood and to bring man out of his mortal manhood and lift him into a higher sense of manhood, a better sense of humanity. How can we do that? And therefore, this long answer. She introduces it and says, Christian Science commands men to master the propensities and to conquer them. Here you have your key tone for the whole tone of truth and truth. Quite something new. She never has tackled this question up to now. She says, how do you find your unchangeable being again? Only if you wake up from your dream of being immortal, how can you wake up? By handling really and mastering the propensities. How can you do that? So here you find, when you read the whole text, that she here depicts really the nature of mortals, what the mortals is. And therefore also shows that the mortal is actually nothing else but a lot of mortal attitudes, mortal characteristics. The mortal consists of what? I just go through the list, what she says, of hatred, lust, revenge, deceit. See, she never has depicted up to this point the mortal. She was always talking about his disease and what disease is. Now she talks about the biggest disease that man can have, namely those mortal qualities. like hatred, lust, revenge, deceit. Then he speaks of fear of sin, his guilty consciousness, the error of sense, of mortal sense, depraved appetite, passion, selfishness, envy, hatred, revenge, to be the slave of wrong desires. And then, mostly, that he is insane. And she gives a long exposition of insanity, showing that the whole of mankind is insane, that not just a few people who are in an asylum are insane, but that the whole world is insane, and that the whole world is just one big asylum for insanes. And we think this is rather a hard way of saying it, but she said, no, it is so. You can't get away from it. Mortals is a state of insanity. To believe that we are mortal is a state of insanity. But if somebody in an insane asylum says, I'm a cat, we consider him to be insane, because we say, you are not a cat, you are a man. I said, oh no, I'm a cat, you know, or a mouse. Huh? So we consider him insane, because he believes to be a complete different identity. But if we believe that we are immortal, it's just the same insanity, because we are not immortal. Because man is the idea of God, not the mortal. So if he believes that he has another identity than what he actually has, he certainly is insane. And so she gives quite a long exposition on insanity. And she says there are many species of insanity. That's quite true. You can have many species, many classifications of it. But she says all sin is insanity in different degrees. Well, we have seen that sin is not just a moral sin, that sin, as she uses it, is actually that belief that man is separate from God. That this is the greatest sin. And that belief that man is separate from God is really an insane belief. He isn't, because he isn't. She says, every sort of sickness or error is insanity. Therefore, there is a universal insanity. Oh, gosh, she even says that. There is a universal insanity of so-called health. People think if they are not sick, they are healthy because the body doesn't trouble them, doesn't pain them, they don't suffer from the body, and so they say, I'm healthy. And so they have that universal insane belief that they are healthy because the body says, I'm healthy. Well, only when God says, I'm healthy, and only we see health as the countenance of God, as the scriptural note was saying at the beginning of this chapter, only then are we sane. But to say that the body is healthy and that we have physical health and therefore that we are men is another kind of insanity. She says that the belief that a drug can heal is another species of insanity. Now think how many insane people we have on this world. All the doctors and all the patients who believe that the drug can heal are insane, because they say, how can mortal mind be reached through matter? It's impossible, through a drug. So that's an absolute insane belief. So finally she says there is another kind of insanity, namely, all what mortal mind thinks is insane. And I think we think a lot, and we think a lot that is absolutely not in line with what mind knows. So whenever we are thinking along a line which is not in line with what mind knows, we are insane. We really should be put away somewhere in an asylum and say, you are absolutely insane. You don't belong here. There is only one thing that's going on, what says there is only one mind. There is only one mind, and there are only the conceptions of mind, the divine mind. Therefore, only the conception of the divine mind are real and true. Everything else is not true. Whatever we think or speak from another standpoint than the divine mind is absolutely insane. Therefore, I always liked I think the MIT once made an investigation how much of what people say all through the day has any value. And they come up and said that 96% of what people are talking during the day have no information value, not even on a material basis, on a human basis. Now, how much would we say has an information value on the basis of divine mind, what people are saying all day long? I think 100% or 1,000%. It's no value. And therefore, I think slowly we should begin to realize that those poor people in an insane asylum, what do? They think along lines that seem not to be normal for us. But the way we think, how we think, is not normal for the divine mind either. So the divine mind says the way you think is not normal. You are insane, what you are thinking and talking. And I think it would bring us a bit more to that point where we don't talk so much during the day and think so much along our brain waves and begin much more to be quiet within ourselves and silent within ourselves and say that if mind doesn't speak, nobody has spoken. So if people speak and you say, well, did mind speak or did mortal mind speak? If the divine mind doesn't speak, nothing has been said. Nothing has been said, really. All that has been said has no value, has no true source, therefore it has no power, therefore it cannot be active, it cannot enact something. It is just valueless. That's all there is about it. And we better wake up out of this insanity. Why on earth should Mrs. Eddy devote so many paragraphs, so many pages on insanity, if that would not be a very important point for every student? All right. So we have to see that we somehow have to wake up out of these, what she calls human animal propensities, and should conquer them. That would be really the job of a practitioner. I like to think about this. That has always impressed me. I didn't learn very much when I went through John Dolly's class. There were just two or three things that stood out. You know how it is, you feel the atmosphere and just two or three things stick out. And they make bang. The one thing that stood out was that you have to handle animal magnetism every day. And I believed it. And the second thing that stood out was that we should every day give birth to ourselves through scientific obstetrics. I believed it, and so I did stick to that. And the third thing that I could remember was that he said, you have a very lasting patient with you, and that's you yourself. And therefore, treat yourself and get rid of the mortal that you think you are. And I think that was a very, very good indication. So I went home and said, all right, I have a patient. I go home from class, I have my first patient. And I started out with that first patient. And I was very hard at that first patient, at me. I just would write down all those animal propensities, all those human wrong qualities and idiosyncrasies that I was finding within myself. And it was quite a long list, I tell you. And everyone that does it will find a very long list. And so I began right away, the day I came home, I began my practice. And I took one wrong quality after the other, as well as I could, and began to treat it. Can you see what you do if you want to get out of insanity, to believe that one is immortal? That you jolly well have to go down and say, what does God know about me? And so you begin really to treat yourself as immortal, to be immortal, the belief that we are immortal, and try to get oneself out of that belief. And so you begin to treat yourself and say, well, I think every mortal is full of some kind of complex. He believes in, he has all kinds of characteristics, like believing in self-depreciation, that he doesn't value himself. That's insanity, that we have no value. That everyone believes that he has parents, that he's born of parents, that he comes from parents. I was very hot at that point. I carried that around wherever I walked in the street, that I have no human parents, that I am straight from God. I began to see that I am desired by the divine mind. I was wanted by the divine mind, that I could never be an unwanted child. And so I could see that the divine mind just was wanting me and therefore was just looking out for its manifestation as man. And so I began to take up all kinds of these wrong qualities, like pride, like being bashful, about hesitant, about being not certain, about having fear of the future, about not valuing oneself. All that sense of that we are made up of mortal stuff and of matter and so on, and began to see that I'm not material, that is insanity to think that I'm material, that I have a body, that I'm incarcerated in a body. I took up all those beliefs. It was a busy practice I had right away. Absolutely busy practice. I could hardly find the time for it, because at the time I was writing on my thesis at the university, that was busy enough, but I took at least one morning of every day. Every day the morning belonged to science, in spite that I was in the middle of my examination and my writing the thesis. Half a day belonged to truth, to God. And so I put first things first. I tried to see as clear as I could see that I'm not a male nor a female, that I'm neuter, that I have an infinite gender, that I have an infinite individuality, that I have no idiosyncrasies, and things like that. And I think that's what we should do. See, that's what is asked here. Before we think that I go home and teach what I have learned, that we first practice what we have learned and just first make ourselves another creature as far as we can. It takes quite a bit. I mean, we never come to an end of handling the belief that we are mortal, but we should at least start that way. And see, that's our practice. And therefore, I can see how Mrs. Eddy could say that before you start teaching, first have a few years good practice, so that you yourself become another man. What's the use of teaching Christian Science if one only teaches it from one's head, and not from one's whole being, from the Christ consciousness? So, if one analyzes oneself, one can easily see that there are dozens and dozens and dozens of claims of animal propensities that claim that we are immortal, and we are not. It's just insanity. And to get out of that Adam dream is one of the practice that we should treat. Yeah.